You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. This is episode 232. There has been a break here and there between weekly installments, just because I've been very busy with the elections, writing, radio appearances, and so on. But we're back, and we're going to do a piece, and we have a piece. We have a very special guest on the line from Medellin, Simon Edwards. He's an English journalist, but an expert on South American football. So we're going to do a podcast episode 232 this week, which has absolutely nothing, I think, to do with the Colombian presidential elections. Although, having said that, there are some circumstances that we will have to discuss politics. So for those of you who are bored of my nattering about the Colombian presidential elections, I apologize in advance. But let me just say, welcome to Simon Edwards on Columbia Calling. Welcome from Bogota to Medellin.
Thanks very much for the invitation. Yes, sun is shining here in Medellin for now. We might get a bit of rain a bit later. But thanks for the invitation. Looking forward to discussing some Colombian football.
Well, fantastic. Let's start with the basics, Simon. When did you decide to become, let's say, a South American expert and move to Colombia to work on football?
Well, I moved to Colombia first in 2008. So, I mean, the football stuff has always kind of been on the side, more here and there from time to time. I've done other things to support it, but it's always been something that I'd like to get back to and now I'm able to dedicate a bit more time to it. So, it's always fun to talk about something that I'd be talking about in a pub if I wasn't talking about on the radio or talking about to you today.
Well, excellent. And it's always good to have experts in these fields. I am no expert. I am an enthusiast. But let's go through the basics. I'm going to tell you how I feel a little bit about this World Cup coming up. Now, it starts relatively soon. It's in Russia. And okay, maybe it's because I'm mature now. I am over 40. This is the World Cup that I've least been interested in. I think I've fallen out of love a little bit with the beautiful game, especially the international game. And maybe because of FIFA Gate, maybe because it's in Russia, and then in 4 years' time, Qatar, and we all know it's a money game. What I mean, is this something that you're finding as an expert, as a journalist, or am I just a one-off out there, shouting like a lunatic at the moon?
Well, I think with recent World Cups, everyone's always enthusiastic, and then afterwards, some people go, it's not what it was. 1990 was when it was at its peak, or whatever your childhood. I think people often look back at the World Cups and the competitions of their childhood as being the best. For me, Euro 96, I'm 30 years old now, so Euro 96 was when football was at its best. But I would say, I think with Colombia, supporting Colombia and probably supporting Colombia more than England now, I think it's kind of reinvigorated some of the enthusiasm. I think there's a lot of cynicism around football in England and the national team, and you can kind of see that the players just don't want to be responsible when it all goes wrong sometimes. They just want to get rid of the ball and give someone else the responsibility for things, and not really enjoying the playing for the national team. But I think with Colombia, you can definitely see that the players love representing their country. And, with the dancing and with the energy and the pride that they have. So, for me, I completely understand your cynicism about the corruption and we're going to Russia and political issues in Russia and all sorts of negative things. But I think if we just focus on the Colombian players and what it means and how the Colombian people, enjoy the national team and how the Colombian national team is a reflection of the best things about Colombia, I think there's still a lot of things to enjoy and look forward to with a celebration of Colombian football.
Well, that's awesome, because you've made me look at it through a different filter, maybe the yellow filter of the tricolor, and I feel a little bit more upbeat about it. It's true, and like you, I would say that I too probably support the Colombia team more than the England team. I'm turning my back on the England team, but the Colombia team, you know, that they do play with a joy, I would say, you know, the alegría, they do play, and therefore it does make it something, you know, fun to watch, and it's fun to be with other people. You know, we're watching it on the big screen in one of the town plazas or main squares, and feeling that there's no aggression, and I think it's just a good feeling. And I think that's what you said there, the best of Colombia comes together in that team. It is the one, I would say, one uniting, universal uniting sort of flag that Colombians can all fall beneath, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was here for the last World Cup, and obviously that was the first time Colombia had been at the World Cup since 1998. So It was a really big, big moment. You could really feel that. The Colombian people were so happy to be back involved in this huge event. I mean, football here in Colombia is massive. And to miss out on that party, I've got some friends involved in the podcast. I've got a friend who lives in Chile. And just to see how he feels not having an invite to this party. I think the World Cup is an amazing thing. You know, it brings people from every part of the world together, different cultures. And obviously, as well, the way that teams play football is a reflection of different aspects, different cultural aspects, historical aspects. So to bring people together from all different parts of the world to interpret this simple game in a different way is really quite an amazing thing. And I think, especially in Colombia, you see at the last World Cup how much it meant to people and how, you know, everybody was involved. People who don't really care about football, everyone was wearing a yellow shirt. Different levels of authenticity, obviously. I don't know how much money Adidas make from Colombian shirt sales, really. But you see everyone with a yellow shirt, and it's really a lot of fun to be involved with this celebration. And the World Cup is a lot of fun.
It's true, it's true. And the podcast you're mentioning is the World Football Index. You're like the Colombia expert for them, is that right?
Yeah, that's the idea, yeah. So we do one every week about the Copa aspects of football in South America, which is always probably my favourite episodes. Obviously, it's good to talk about, the tournaments and things that are happening. But, yeah, it's always fun to look at the different ways that culturally football is enjoyed in different parts of South America and, with the football fans and the Barra Bravas and some of the negative and positive aspects that brings. It's interesting to get into that. Excellent. Side of football as well.
So let's cover some basics as well of this. Now, remind my listeners, and some of them, of course, are experts and so on, and they know who they are, the people out there. But who's in Colombia's group? Which is the Colombian group this time?
So this time, Colombia have a group which is quite evenly balanced. There's not any massive teams, or there's not any teams which Colombia should be necessarily massively afraid of, but also there's not any really easy games either. So it's going to be an interesting one. I think a lot of the Colombian fans are hoping for big, big times in the knockout stages. And if they do get through, then they're maybe Belgium and England. But first things first, they have Poland, Senegal and Japan in the group. So three teams from different sides of the world who play different kinds of football. So it should be very interesting. Senegal, I think, have got a lot of pacey players. Obviously, Mane at Liverpool is one to watch. Very athletic team. Poland have Lewandowski, who plays for Bayern Munich, is one of the best strikers in the world. So they'll have to be very careful in the box with Lewandowski. And Japan is a real team, a good balance, good technical level. Maybe not quite as dangerous in attack, but a team that's going to do really well when they have the ball. So Colombia have three rivals who I think Colombia are probably just about favourites, but there's going to be no easy games. And hopefully Colombia progress, and then they have some of those big, exciting games against some of the biggest sides in the world, hopefully in the knockout stage.
It's very cool. I like the sound of this group. So Poland, Senegal, Japan. Of course, Colombia were drawn with Japan last time, wasn't it? Ivory Coast, Japan,
and Greece.
That's right. Okay, so now Japan, I don't think there's a weak team in that group. As you say, Japan, if they retain possession, which they're technically, very apt, very able, I think, they could cause some problems. Senegal, big, fast, physical team, but we think maybe suited to the Colombian game. Poland, Yeah, you know, Lewandowski, if he gets the right kind of distribution. But you could see Colombia coming through top in that group, couldn't you? You could see them coming through, you know, let's say three evenly weighted games, but, you know, they could be hard fought wins, which give Colombia the kind of, let's say, confidence that they might need to progress.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think there's anything Colombia should be afraid of. They have to be careful. There's teams that can definitely hurt them. Obviously, Colombia have, I think, in Davinson Sanchez and Yerry Mina, two very imposing, strong, physical defenders who are going to be a match for any side, but also two defenders who lack a bit of experience. So they have to be careful to concentrate, because Lewandowski will pounce. You know, as a guy who scored 5 goals in 10 minutes for Bayern Munich. So definitely one you have to watch out for. But I think with Poland, it did seem that they peaked maybe a year and a half ago in terms of qualifying. They did excellently in qualifying. But some of the players are getting a little bit older. That may be the best indication for Colombia that Poland maybe aren't quite at their best. But again, there's still quality in that squad. And we'll have to see. But it's going to be, there'll be no easy games. There's no Saudi Arabias or teams that you would fancy a comfortable win. They're all going to be tight. But I think Colombia have the quality, at least on paper, to definitely progress from that group.
Yeah, and so what do you think? I mean, they've been a bit, I would say, flat in some of the warm-up games, the friendly games. But again, these are friendly games. So nil-all draw with Egypt. I think Colombia could have scored about four, but didn't. But, you know, 19 players had a run out. They didn't. No one got injured, and everyone got to play together. So I don't think we draw too much from it.
No, I think if we look at Colombia since the last World Cup, and obviously the last World Cup was a huge success for Colombia. Disappointing to go out to Germany, but a really impressive showing, and they've won over a lot of neutrals with the way that they played and the energy inside. Since then, not so convincing. I mean, Peckerman's used 73 players since the last World Cup in competitive games. So basically, if you're Colombian, you might have had a phone call at some point and had a run out for the team. And I think that's affected the kind of the balance and the cohesion in the squad. Hopefully now, with some time together, they can focus. I think during qualifying, at times, they were a bit too reactionary. So we're playing against the Bolivian side, so let's bring some good physical players in. Or we're away against Brazil, let's bring lots of good defensive players in. And I think maybe they made too many changes at times, would be my comment. But I think on paper, the squad has settled down to something that looks very, very strong. For me, the biggest challenge is playing Falcao and James in the same team. Because Falcao is best with someone alongside him doing all his dirty work. He's a very, very dangerous striker in the box, but his hold-up play, his link-up play with the midfield, doing all the running around and connecting with the midfield, he isn't particularly strong at that. You know, before the 2014 World Cup, Teófilo Gutiérrez often played alongside him to do all that dirty stuff, and then he can get in the box and finish off the goals. I think he likes having someone close to him, whereas James is a player who likes to drift and impact upon all over the pitch, drop deep, get the ball pass, and try and dictate things. So for me, that's one of the big questions. Colombia are best playing 4-2-3-1 with, you know, two defensive midfielders, James in the middle, running around, playing as he wants, and then Cuadrado and probably Izquierdo or Muriel on the wing, giving the width. And then that leaves one striker, which is one of the big issues. Because I don't think Falcao is at his best when he's alone as a striker. So that's probably Colombia's biggest question they have: how to get that balance right between keeping Falcao happy and getting the best from James.
That's a tough one as well, isn't it? I mean, you know, Falcao, he's a quality striker, and you know, he's proven himself time and time again, coming back from injury and coming back from those torrid years in the Premiership. But yeah, I just have the feeling I just see too much of Juan Pablo Angel in him as well. It's like, you know, without someone alongside him, he's not going to score goals.
Yeah, this is the issue. And I think if you go for an alternative like Miguel Borja or Zapata played at times, didn't make it in the squad in the end. For example, Borja, I think Borja helps create more chances. But I think Falcao is much better at taking the chances that are created. So you don't want to lose Falcao, because half a chance, bang, it's a goal. If you put into the box, you probably score. But I think with Falcao, you're less likely to create so many of those clear-cut chances, just because his link-up play isn't so good. And if you play it long with Falcao, it's probably going to come back at you. Whereas there are other players you could maybe take it down and keep it in the opposition half and allow the play to build a bit better. So for me, that is one of the big questions. Obviously, Falcao starts, obviously James starts, but I do think it is a bit of a challenge to get the best of both of them together.
Very interesting. Definitely something to keep an eye on for those games coming up in the group stage. And definitely something that Peckham, and I'm sure, is considering. I mean, you know, a great football mind like himself, he's got to think this through. But of course, no Colombian would ever accept neither Falcao nor James not starting. I mean, they have to start. The two sort of talisman of the team. We're going to take a short break on this episode 232. We're talking to Simon Edwards, who's an English expert in South American football. He's a journalist working on these themes, these topics. He works for the podcast World Football Index, and you can follow him on Twitter at Simon Edwards AF. That's it, Simon Edwards AF. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a minute. So thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota. Our guest, our very special guest this week, Simon Edwards. He's in Medellin. We're talking about the upcoming World Cup in Russia. Colombia's chances, of course. Colombia, and we've talked about the big issue there. We'll be finishing off the first segment of this show is how to play James Rodriguez and Radamel Falcao in the same team. Of course, Simon, very succinctly, very in depth, in fact, told us the issues of playing the two of them together. But of course, I mean, you know, they're just going to have to gel. They have to find a way. How is it? Could we, if James likes to drift, let's say, as you mentioned, Simon, is there someone that we could put in a hole behind Falcao?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an option. I think one of the issues is Colombia is probably their biggest strength as a team. Obviously, you know, Falcao and James are great, but out wide, there's a lot of pace and a lot of. I think that is really important to stretch teams. So Cuadrado on the right wing, at times he gets criticised because he'll take chances all game. He'll try and beat his defender over and over again. And you see him stand him up and then drop the shoulder and try and go on the outside. And that can frustrate people because if it's not working, he loses the ball. Mm. But I think it's very, very important to have that width because it draws the opposition out and creates space in the middle for James. So I think it's very important to have that width. Also, the fullbacks, we have Santiago Arias at right back and Frank Fabra at left back. Frank Fabra, who plays for Boca Juniors, is looking like he might join Everton in England quite soon. And Santiago Arias at PSV, maybe joining Juventus. So there's a lot of players in this Colombia squad who maybe the first time some European viewers see some future stars or players who are going to make a big impact in Europe. So I think with the two attacking fullbacks overlapping, and the two wingers wide, I think that's very important for Colombia, especially with Falcao in the middle. He likes crosses, he likes crossing, you know, balls into the box. So that all works. And then I think to add an extra striker, you take away some of that. And then what do you do with James? We've seen him play as a left midfielder in a midfield four before. And the problem is he doesn't really defend very well. We, you know, you don't really want James having to track back, and I don't think he would even if he told to be honest. So I think that's the problem. You really want two people in the midfield, probably Carlos Sanchez and maybe Wilmar Barrios or Mateus Uribe, who are going to be good defensively to enable those wide players to attack.
Carlos Sanchez was the guy who used to play for West Ham, right?
Which one?
Carlos Sanchez.
Well, he was at Aston Villa.
Aston Villa, that's it.
Spain and Italy. In his club career, he hasn't been great, but for Colombia, he is the rock. He is incredibly good. There's memes of him, block it, block it, block it. So he's surprisingly good for Colombia. I tell my English friends how well he does, and they find it hard to believe because he wasn't so good in England. But he's had games where he's marked Messi out of the game and very, very physical and composed. So I think he's definitely going to be starting in midfield. So. Yeah, I don't know if there's a clear answer, but we'll just have to see. Obviously, there's changes that can be made in the second half if things aren't working. And you know, having a problem like Falcao doesn't really feel like a massive problem, but I do think it's something we need to think about.
Yeah, it's one of those good problems. I mean, you know, you've got a striker like Falcao up front. Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, Colombia, you know, we've talked about the sort of the ambience of the games here, we're talking a bit about the team. I'm just going to change a little bit of tack. I mean, there's some interesting players coming through. Has Peckerman brought any wild card players along in the squad?
There were a few players. Some people were calling for a young guy called Camilo Cucho Hernandez, who is 19, owned by Watford, actually, in England. Mm-hmm. He's been playing on loan at Huesca. He's already played over 100 games, and he's just turned 19 years old. So he was captain in Colombia at 17 for Pereira. He's now on the radar of every top team in Europe, but I think it's a bit too early for him. And he was never really in contention. There were some calls, I think, after the World Cup. He'll definitely get a shout. I think mostly with the Colombian squad, there's some players who have been around South American football for a while, but are on the verge of making a big, big step up in their careers. So I mentioned Wilmar Barrios, who's from Tolima. He's been playing for Boca Juniors. He's become like a real big fan favourite there at Boca Juniors, obviously one of the biggest teams in South America, a real tenacious, ball-winning central midfielder. He could have a big World Cup. Again, I mentioned he might be off to Tottenham in England. They're very interested in signing him and joining up with Davinson Sanchez. So that would be a very interesting move. Also, Mateus Oribe, who, again, is a player who kind of developed quite late. He was at Envigado. Envigado is a small team here in Colombia, but a team that produces so many international quality players. And he was best mates with James when they were both at Envigado. And they were kind of seen as kind of comparable in terms of quality. James went off to Argentina and then to Portugal and now at Real Madrid and Bayern Munich. Whereas Mateus Oribe stayed at Envigado until he was 22. Then he moved to Tolima and started making a bit of more of an impression. Then Nacional, won the Libertadores. And now he's at Club America. He's, I think, 26, 27, but he's suddenly kind of burst onto the world scene and shown that quality that people kind of identified as a teenager. So he's kind of a late developer in a lot of ways, but he's now on the radar for Real Madrid. So this is a player who's made huge strides, and he can play in so many positions. He's probably, for Colombia, will be a defensive midfielder with Carlos Sanchez, but he's also played very well as a right-back, as an attacking midfielder, as a winger. So a very interesting player. He's very versatile.
This is cool. I like... I like utility players like this who can play in lots of places. I mean, they're so worthwhile for a tournament of this type, especially if injuries come through and you need to switch people around. And I also like people, let's say he's, as you say, this gentleman, he's not a young player, he's a mature player, but then mentally mature too. If he can get into the sort of, let's say, the more twilight years of his career and end up at Real Madrid, I mean, that's a serious step up, but it's also, it's the greatest flattery to even be associated.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think, it looked like his career was going nowhere. He was 22, 23, still at Envigado. Basically, if you haven't left Envigado by the time you're 21, then you've done something wrong. Probably, because they don't pay very good wages. Honestly, there's players there earning minimum wage, $200 a month. So it looked as though, and you could tell the way he was playing that, he kind of thought that this football thing wasn't going to happen. And then to move to Tolima and become a star man as a number 10 for Tolima, and then get the chance to go to Nacional at the time when they were on the verge of international championship wins. They were in the Copa Libertadores semi-final. So it was the biggest time to join them, and then to make a breakthrough and get into the team and play as a right back when you've been an attacking midfielder and be really strong. Then move to Club America. So yeah, it does show that sometimes players are written off maybe a bit too early. And if you keep plugging away and maybe make a move, then there's always the chance that you can, again, find that form that he had as a teenager.
Now, let me jump in here with my question. Now, Colombians will string me up and have me hung, drawn and quartered. But I have reservations about Ospina in goal. I think he's a great shot stopper, but I do see him flapping at corners. I'm just a little bit concerned. I don't know. Should I be?
Yes. Basically. No, I completely understand why Ospina is so popular with Colombia, because over the last 10 years, he has saved Colombia over and over again. Incredible reactions. There's been times where everyone's got their hands in their head thinking it's a goal, and he'll pull something out of nowhere and make an incredible reaction save. But you're right. I mean, the commentators here in Colombia, tú tranquilo, you know.
Yeah.
Ospina's got it. But that really isn't applicable at the moment. No. I don't think anyone's tranquilo when the ball is in the box and his hands take crosses. So he's still a good goalkeeper. He can still be a positive difference changer for Colombia. But his handling, his concentration has been a little bit off in some key games. So, yeah, I think if Colombia are going to fulfill their potential, we need Ospina of 2014 and not so much Ospina of 2017. So we'll see. It's a question. Colombia have no alternatives right now. There are a few good young goalkeepers, but basically that's, you know, all of the good teams in Colombia have foreign goalkeepers. Yeah. There's not much faith in Colombian keepers. So it's Ospina or nothing really at the moment. So we just have to hope that he can rediscover some of his best form.
Yeah, I find myself breaking out to sweat when crosses come in. I get what I will call it as the Joe Hart reaction. I mean, it's just like, oh, no. Well, that's all very interesting. Now, and of course, I'm very glad that you mentioned Cucho Hernandez. Of course, owned by Watford, my team, so that's always very exciting. We did have we've had two Colombians at the side before that. We had Victor Ibarbo, who scored in the last World Cup, played, I don't know, about 20 minutes of football with Watford a couple of seasons ago before being sent back ignominiously to I think, Nacional. I'm not even sure. I think his attitude wasn't right, apparently. And then we've had, what is the guy? Which one?
Zuniga,
yeah, the one who hacked down Neymar, that's it. But he will forever be in my memory and be a favourite because for the first time in 30 years, we beat Manchester United and he scored. So that was it, you know, 2-1, he was one of the scorers. So Colombians, you know, are loved at Watford. So hopefully Cucho Hernandez will come at some point and actually play and not be just part of the investment package of the Pozzo family. But World Cup. Now, I want to get back to this, and so, you know, I said I wasn't going to talk politics, but of course, everything in Colombia is related to politics. We have the second round of the presidential elections on the 17th of June, and the World Cup has started. Could this affect, I don't know, Colombia don't play until, when's their first game? I'm just looking here, 19th of June, that's right, Colombia, Japan. I think, yeah. So there's still a few days between the second round and the first game. But the 17th of June, as you said, Colombians are football mad. So you've got in the morning, you've got Brazil versus Switzerland, Costa Rica versus Serbia, and Germany versus Mexico. All interesting games. I'm hoping this won't take away from our, you know, this won't create a huge wave of abstentions in this voting, you know, practice here, because it's an important thing to go out and vote in the presidential elections. How do you feel about this? I mean, is it, every time it's 4 years, it comes round, it's the World Cup and it's an election.
Yeah, well, I think that the candidates are so divisive that people are going to either vote or abstain, you know, as a decision, as an active decision in this case. I don't think many people are neutral about the candidates in this election, so that may be a draw in terms of voting for good or for bad. Yeah. People are either going to be terrified of one or the other options, I would suspect, for this election, and that would probably draw people out. You know, again, it's huge. The World Cup is huge here in Colombia. There are grown men on every street corner desperately trying to find stickers for their Panini album. So, you know, that gives you a sense of how World Cup crazy Colombia is. But I do think elections here are a big thing. Everything kind of shuts down and you know, there's a lot of steps that are taken to get people to vote. So I do think that people might slip out for an hour or so, depending on the queues, and cast their vote during halftime, perhaps.
When whilst I'm on to these random comments here, because it's almost like a, you know, sort of narrative flow of consciousness here. James Rodriguez, has he created a cryptocurrency? Did I read something about that? You can buy like James cryptocurrency or get paid in it? I don't know.
I'm not sure. He sells everything.
Okay. I saw something. I thought. Well, I should ask Simon that. He'll probably know. But
I saw him do an advert for Colombian bread when he was in Monaco. And I was like, there's no one in Monaco ordering bread from Colombia.
Colombian bread. And in Monaco, in French bread is, you know, yeah, okay.
Yeah, or Monaco bread. Sure,
definitely. He does do everything. I mean, I've seen him on advertising everything. So let's talk about the rest of, so let's say, Latin American teams. I mean, you, this is your field. This is your background. Of course, it's quite nice. It's very nice to see Peru in the World Cup. First time since the 70s, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, firstly, for the kit. I think yeah. It's one of the iconic kits in world football, with the white shirt with the diagonal red stripe. So, yeah, definitely good to see them back. Also, Paulo Guerrero has finally had his suspension overturned last minute. So Peru is already celebrating, and the thing hasn't even started yet. So their main striker, their Falcao, basically, was suspended for it was a drugs issue. He claims that he drank some coca tea or something, and that was the reason. He appealed, and because he appealed, they extended the suspension, which included the World Cup. So that was probably a mistake. But he's had it overturned just this week, so that was going to be a huge blow for them. But, you know, they're a good team. They're going to play a 4-2-3-1. Similar in setup to Colombia, really. They have Cristian Cueva, who's there, James Rodriguez, their playmaker. Paulo Guerrero, who's there, Falcao. Mm. And then they have two wingers and two attacking fullbacks. So they'll set up in a similar way, perhaps a little bit more disciplined and a bit more kind of tenacious in how they defend and tighten up than Colombia, who are a bit more free-flowing. They've got a tricky group, but it's a team with a good balance and a good organisation and some ways that they can hurt the opposition with that pace out wide and that Guerrero in the box, a proper number nine goal scorer. Mm-hmm. So they should do okay. A tricky group, France, Australia and Denmark. But they could maybe definitely in contention for that second place and getting through that group.
Yeah, you know, maybe a bit of Latin flair over, you know, some top turnover Denmark or do something against Australia.
Yeah, I think Australia are going to be tough and organised, but
yeah,
they've changed their coach since they qualified already and not a massive amount of quality. So, you know, winning against Australia, something against Denmark and, you know, then don't get beaten by France too badly and they may well get through in second.
Are they still playing Tim Cahill, the Australians?
They brought him back, yeah.
Oh, my word.
He's back in the squad, so I think that says everything about Australia, really.
He's probably as old as me. All right. It's like, talking about Latin America, very, very exciting to see Panama for the first time in the World Cup.
Yeah, and I mean, the story around their qualification as well is fascinating. One of their players was murdered during the qualifying stages. Which obviously was a really tough moment, and the team kind of got together and really, you know, worked hard to get themselves over the line. And if you've seen the scenes from that final game, they were 1-0 behind. They had to win. They had to rely on the US losing to Trinidad. The US lost to Trinidad, and they scored two late goals to win their decisive game. And when they were 2-1 up, desperately trying to run the clock down, you know, an old lady ran onto the pitch and laid down pretending she had a heart attack, and one of the subs ran 40 yards up the touchline to boot the ball away and waste a few more seconds. So, yeah, great to see Panama back in. They have a pair of 37-year-old journeymen who play in Guatemala in their squad.
That's so. Blas Perez, isn't it? That's one of those. It's Blas Perez, who plays with, like, Comunicaciones or something.
Yeah, and Baloy as well.
So, my God.
They've got a mix. They've got a few younger guys, a couple of guys at Ghent, some guys in the MLS who are more interesting. But a lot of the guys who've been there for the last 10 years are, you know, kind of maybe a bit past their best. But, you know, we'll see. They've got Belgium, Tunisia and England in their group. So, you know, if they get one big, big result in one of those games, that will be job done. They've already massively overachieved to qualify. So they're going to have some fun, and we'll see how they do. Should be interesting.
I think I'm going to buy a Panama shirt. I think that's my shirt. Although I do really like the Colombia shirt with the 80s, you know, kind of retro feel to it, I have to say. I'm not there yet, but I might get it. But talking about the other South American teams, then the usual suspects, Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay. I mean, Brazil are looking pretty hot again.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the start of qualifying, Brazil were out at the bottom, they were really struggling. But they brought in Chiche, who's, you know, Brazil I think Colombia and Brazil are two countries that don't have very good managers at all. We've talked about this on the podcast, and Uruguay and Argentina have managers all over the world at the biggest teams, but Colombia and Brazil, I mean, Colombia, none of the big teams in Colombia have Colombian managers, which I think is something interesting to look at. I can't give you an explanation, but it's definitely something that Colombian football is lacking, and I think Brazil has the same problem. But luckily, they've stumbled across, after bringing Dunga back for some reason, they've stumbled across Tite, who, again, is the best Brazilian manager. And you can see the quality they have combined with a good manager, good team spirit, good balance. They're flying. They were out of the qualifying stages at the halfway stage, and they finished 10 points clear at the top in South America. So very, very impressive. Obviously, Neymar in there, but a good balance overall. And they've got Gabriel Jesus in attack as opposed to Fred. So a big upgrade from 2014 for Brazil, and definitely one of the contenders for this year's World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? When they brought back Dunga, and I was like, I mean, you had this opportunity to step forward, and you take on Dunga, and you just, it's all about, oh, God, again. so it's nice to see that, you know, the Brazil of all, it's almost like Jogo Bonito is back, you know? But so tell us a little bit more. I mean, Argentina, can they make any waves? Are we, what are we looking at with them? I don't know a lot about them, actually, in truth.
Well, honestly, in qualifying, Argentina without Messi would have finished, I think, eighth in the table. Argentina with Messi would have finished like second or third. So they are 100%, they have been 100% Messi reliant. There's good attacking players in that squad, but the defence is looking very shaky. The goalkeeper Romero is out, and they have two options, Willy Caballero, who is not great playing in England, and they have Franco Armani, who was very close to playing for Colombia. He was the Nacional goalkeeper for 6 years, won the Libertadores. For me, by far their best option, but it looks like maybe Caballero, Messi's mate, which is a big thing in Argentina, may get the nod in goal. But the defence is looking very, very weak. At fullback, they're not strong. Centre-backs, not the best. In front of that, they've got Mascherano, whose legs are kind of gone in a lot of ways, and then four attackers who, in qualifying, all got in each other's way or kind of got out of Messi's way and just let him do everything. So in qualifying, Messi often dribbled round and around in circles looking for someone to pass to, and this doesn't make sense because there's so many good players, and they've now got Sampaoli, a proper manager, so we'll see what happens. But they're talking about a 2-3-3-2 formation, like very attacking. But I just don't see the personnel there to play that high-intensity football that he likes to play. So for me, there's massive, massive questions of Argentina. And if they do get to the final, they win the thing, that just further cements Messi as the greatest player who's ever lived, because I see big, big problems in this Argentina side.
Yeah, I mean, if you're pushing that high and pressuring that high, I mean, surely it's just a ball over the end, over the top, and then a fast striker like a Jamie Vardy, let's say.
Yeah, and honestly, the defence isn't great and the fullbacks are high. You know, I think, we'll see what happens. Yeah. There's lots of quality there. They've got good players, but I am concerned for them, really. Oh, we'll have to see.
Well, no love lost there, really, particularly. But that's it. So, let's tie this back to Colombia as we wind down this show. It's really interesting. I mean, you talk so fluidly about all of this. I mean, things that I have no idea about. I am an armchair fan, but becoming more and more, let's say, a little bit more interested now, because you speak so well about it. But so what can we, I mean, realistically out there for my listeners, what can we expect from Colombia? How far are they going to get this year?
Well, I think in terms of the group, I think Colombia are probably the strongest team in this group. They could collapse. It could all crumble. I can think of 10 ways that things could go wrong, but I can also, on paper, I can see them qualifying from the group. And then they'll play the winner of Group G, which will be Belgium. It depends. If they finish first, they'll play the second place team in Group G. And if they finish second, they'll play the first place team. So they'll face Belgium, Panama, Tunisia, or England. You would think of those, probably Belgium and England will qualify. I would say Belgium probably first. So if Colombia finish first in their group, they may face England in the next round. And if they finish second, they may face Belgium, I would probably suggest. And I think on paper, Colombia are better than England. I think on paper, Colombia are worse than Belgium. But we'll see. I mean, Belgium have underachieved in the last few years. I'm not convinced by Martinez as the coach.
No.
I think they've got loads of quality, but we'll have to see if they can play to the potential. England will be a fun game if England, if Colombia plays England. I think I'm going to be in England for Colombia versus England potentially. So
put your yellow shirt away.
No, I think I'm going to wear a Colombian shirt. But, you know, I've had a look, and all the Colombian bars are in Brixton. So
yes, they are.
Coming back from Brixton in the middle of the night in a Colombia shirt after a Colombian victory over England could be a fun experience.
Let me just interrupt there. You go to a Colombian bar, let's say, where, you know, the Rincon Paisa or whatever, they're down there in Brixton, and you're in a Colombia shirt, you're going to be adopted. You're not going home that night, so you don't have anything to worry about.
That's fine. I'm just getting home afterwards. I'm sure it's hazardous, but
yeah.
We'll see. But I think if Colombia get through their group and then face either England or Belgium, that is going to be the big tournament-defining match.
Mm.
If they can beat England, that will be the story of 2018 for Colombia. Anything after that is a bonus. But I think Colombia should definitely be focusing on getting out of the group, getting to that England or Belgium tie in the second round. And then I think if they get a win there, feelings are high, everything's working, and we'll see where we go. So I think if Colombia don't qualify from the group, there'll be a lot of disappointment. But I think if we get to that second round, have one of those high-profile games against the top European side, then Colombia have a chance to show what they're made of and make a big impact on the World Cup. And I think that's going to be the most interesting moment for Colombia. If they get through that, well, then it gets tough. Then we talk about potentially Germany and some of the big teams, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think get out of the group, get into that second round, have a big game against the top European side, and we'll see.
Very.
We can go from there.
Quite exciting, isn't it? I think Colombia could beat England. I think Colombia could beat Belgium, you know. I just think it would be one of those things where Eden Hazard fails to click or something, and they could just, you know, like he disappears in Chelsea games sometimes.
Look, now you're getting carried away. The top fever is...
Yes, you've converted me. I was a bystander until now. But I do think so. Everything has to go, and they all have to be in the right frame of mind. And if James is not in the right frame of mind, you know, we've seen it before, in different performances. We've seen it in every team in the world. This happens. So I just think it is fascinating. And I am starting to get excited now. This is the right time to do a podcast. So let me just take this moment, say thank you, Simon, for your time and your expertise. And if Colombia get really far, we'll have you back on and you can tell us why it all went right.
I hope so. That'd be
great, wouldn't it? I mean, you know, so... We've been talking to Simon Edwards, who's an expert journalist in South American football. He works on the World Football Index podcast you can hear every week. Follow him at Twitter, Simon Edwards, SAF. That's his handle. And thank you again, Simon. It's been really informative and enjoyable talking about the World Cup with you. And, you know, it's not just banter. You actually have genuine fact behind your conversation, which makes it so much more interesting.
Thanks for the invitation. I enjoyed it, and looking forward to getting into that World Cup. Football every day for a month. Could be better.
It's true. This has been Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McCall talking to Simon Edwards, episode 232. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a political edition, because of course it is the second round of the presidential elections, June 17th. So don't go away. Thank you for listening. Bye bye.